Gang, don't end up like Tom Brady. You can have it all. You don't need to sacrifice the personal life by having a great career. And this next guest tells you how to do it. Listen on. Hello, it's Jake Cinzio, host of Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, Eddie Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, back to the pink shirt. I like it. I got my red shirt on just for you. We're thinking this morning. I mean, I felt you this morning. I said, I think he may be wearing pink this morning. So let me go with the red. Let me go with the red psycho bunny. Man. No, I got the untucked aside. I got psycho bunny on for you today, brother.
Gino, you are in the ether, my friend. And our guest today is in the ether. We have a very special guest today. Today's guest is the author of Epic Life. In addition to being a husband, a dad, he runs two global companies, both a PR firm and a SaaS platform. So without further ado, Justin Bream, welcome to the show.
Yeah, you guys, I love the energy and the fast talking. People always tell me like, oh, you got to slow down when you talk. I'm like, well, maybe I won't have to this time. So that's good.
There's no slowing down with the G Daddy, especially when he has his psycho bunny, his killer psycho bunny. So, hey, let's get to know each other a little bit. Tell us your journey and how you got started in business.
Yeah. So I was a journalist for 20 years. And so you don't get into journalism for revenue, employee count off. Like, I don't understand any of that stuff. It never made sense to me. So
journalism or employee count?
I was an entrepreneur who happened to be a journalist. So
okay.
Actually never understood if it bleeds, it leads, negative news, political news. I don't understand that. So
Justin, time out. I don't think they understand it as well. They're doing such a piss poor job of it. I think you probably know more than they do, and you don't understand it. So sorry.
Well, this is hilarious. It's hilarious because so 20 years they gave me all these weird jobs because they didn't know what to do with me. And I never understood what they were complaining about. And they never understood why I was like writing about cool people changing the world. Like I just didn't know.
That's not blood in the streets, though. That's not going to sell newspapers, man. What are you doing? You're going against the grain here.
Hey, I don't know. That's what I mean. I don't understand. Like, and then like people always, they're like, oh, you're such a good salesperson. I go, I am? Really? I don't think so. I mean, I haven't done anything outbound in years. So I just connect global visionary to global visionary. And then people connect me to global visionary who want to share their story with the world. So I haven't done anything out. It's weird, but I guess, you know, people like us are usually aliens within our own family, community, and verticals. The only ones who really understand us are top entrepreneurs in the world. So I just didn't know that I was that person until job salary was cut in half, couldn't find a job, reached out to 5,000 people to find first five clients while I was working full-time at half salary after I incorporated. I still don't know what an S-corp is because I think it's funny. I'm actively trying to not learn what an S-corp is. And then got fifth client after 6 weeks and resigned the next day. And then at the time, this was 2017, Robert Feeder was the top media columnist in the Midwest. I started my own firm. So that was just to get the first company started. Most people can't do that. But that's what, you know, top entrepreneur, that's every story is like that.
So Justin, what are you doing when you get these first five or six clients? What's the business look like?
So I love that question. The really smart people ask me that. The people that are business owners, the questions they ask is, so how did you do that? And they keep asking because they get stopped at the start. Because a true visionary like you is like, oh, what actually did you provide? So I didn't know what I was doing, right? Because you don't go to journalism school for business, you know? So anything a traditional PR firm would do, social media, press releases, taking photos of like anything. And the reason why it was a five client threshold was because that month by month, I guess, salary or whatever you want to call it, was the same amount that I had been making as a journalist before my job salary was cut.
Well, you really are a journalist. Huh? That's the way they think. I'm going to make X amount, replace this salary and live a comfortable life and maybe not go anywhere. And just for everybody out there, I'm not a really smart person. I've just interviewed thousands of people who are a lot smarter than me and just listening to their stories. And you see common threads of people getting... Yeah, getting to a threshold where like Jake and I were the same thing. We want autonomy. We want to be able to have in our lives. We don't want to retire. We want to really be able
to retire.
We want to be able to create impact and do what we want to do and enjoy it and say, I don't want to go to work today, but I want to go to work for the next 17 days straight. So you're 2017. How 3 years later do you come out and write a book about business if you're a self-proclaimed not business person?
That's a great question. No one's ever asked me that because the book's called Epic Business. So the book. OK, so here's what happened. There's a thing called Gallup Clifton Strength Finders, and there's 34 of them. And most of the people I talk to, they're top five in ideation because they're idea. They're all over the place. ADD diagnosed or undiagnosed. And it's not a disorder. It's a sign of genius, but it's mislabeled by humans. And so there's 34 of them. I'm 32 out of 34 in ideation, almost dead last. However, most of my day is talking to top ideators. You know, they're all over the place. And when I hear a really great idea, which is maybe once a month, I will write it down. And then my top three are activate, maximize, achieve. So I'll take that great idea and then activate, maximize, achieve. So what happened was, the first on the company's, the first company's 30 month anniversary, I posted a list of 30 great ideas that I had actually taken from ideators and incorporated into first company to build it into a global company that only partners with visionaries, not business owners, visionaries, fundamental difference. And so I posted that list. I think at the time, I think I had 35,000 followers or something like that. And everybody's like, oh, you need to write a book on that. So I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. I'll do that. And so, you know, wrote the book in, I think, 40 days. Chris Foster wrote Never Split the Difference, did the foreword. You know, most
I would love Chris. Chris's been on the show before. He's that guy. Right. That guy's great. Love him.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So people like you love, you know, that's, so if I'm not around people like that, I get bored very quickly. And then, you know, so I'm very thankful for it. I still do a ton of media for that book. And certainly for the second one too, but it was like, how do you build a global business with zero business background while you see your family? So that's really what that book was about. And then this one is like, the new one is like, how do you build collaborative global companies while putting your loved ones first? Cause I talk to one to two people like us every week that have let entrepreneur life destroy their family life or prevented them from having a family. And I just don't, it doesn't compute to me.
So Justin, Jake and I are interviewing the Napoleon Hill of the 1930s. You're basically Napoleon Hill out there interviewing and discussing and talking to high level people and saying, this is what this person does. This is what that person does. What characteristics do you see on these high level entrepreneurs or these visionaries? You know, cause there's gotta be some common threads amongst a lot of these high level individuals.
So you're a pattern recognizer. And so all my brain does is turn everything into patterns, everything. Because so when you're so low in ideation, it's actually a strength because you know immediately if it's a great idea. And then again, activate, maximize, achieve. And then when I talk to someone, they're like, oh, I've just gotten my third divorce, or I never see my kids, or I never had kids, or I never spend time with my family. I'm like, that's a bad idea. I'm going to activate, maximize, achieve, not doing that. Okay. So literally all my books they're just patterns. So I guess I can give you the two best ones that I've really incorporated in my life at a very, very high level every day. So one is, if you have the right mindset, it attracts the right network and creates the right opportunities. So work on my mindset, attracts the right network. They create opportunities for me. I create opportunities for them. So I haven't done anything outbound in years, just Right mindset, attract right people, visionaries, not business owners, visionaries, fundamental difference.
So Justin, time out 1 second. What does the right mindset look like to you? Because for me, the 100%. Right mindset is a growth mindset. There's the fix and the growth. And for me, the growth is always constantly wanting to learn, challenge myself. It's the investment of loss, knowing that I'm going to suck for a couple of years at doing something. And that's okay. It's going to be hard. I mean, humbling myself to my children, trying to learn how to sing.
Investment of loss, Gino. That's a very professional way to say I'm going to suck.
It is. It's just, you know, Jake, you know how hard it is when you're sitting there in the studio and you're singing and your 18-year-old is saying, hey, Gino, you want to cover the note? Dad, you want to cover that note? You don't sound right. And I'm like, really, guys, give me a break. You know what I'm saying? But the growth mindset says, you know, I should listen to my kids because
no,
my kids
they should.
Right,
and they should give you shit. I love that.
They do. So, Justin, the right mindset. Let's talk about that just real quick. What you think okay. the right mindset
is. So, again, you're a pattern recognizer. And so my firm's only partner with people with three attributes in their mindset, only three. Okay, because I simplify everything. So one is visionary, one is abundance, and one is investment. So visionaries who live in abundance and who look at things as investments, not costs, you can only be one of two types of people because I simplify everything. So one is you're running a high six-figure to 10-figure business. You see your family and friends whenever you want to, and you do what you like to be, do what you like to do and what you're good at. Or you're going to be one of those people, you're not their revenue profit wise, but you will be. So there's no, what do you cost or charge? There's no nickel and diming nonsense. There's what is an investment with you look like. So again, simplifying into patterns, without quantifying it, I would say my firm's partner with maybe 0.1% of the population, maybe. Mm-hmm. However, most people are like, oh, that's a small number. I go, no, you have the wrong mindset. You don't have abundance mindset. So let's say there's 8 billion people on the planet. 0.1% of 8 billion is 8 million. So there's 8 million of yous out there, and you're the only ones that actually do anything. So I ignore, you know, essentially most of society, but that's okay because the 0.1% are the ones that actually do something, and they allow me to spend time with my family, which is really what's most important to me.
So let's talk about the abundance and the investment in the coaching. When did you start getting coaching? Because, you know, journalism, they're not in the abundance mindset. They're just about
exact opposite. But I'm an entrepreneur who happens to be a journalist. Fundamental difference. Fundamental. This is hilarious.
Are you a recovering journalist?
No, because so I get that question a lot. The purpose of my life is to be a connecting superhero for every visionary, abundance, investment mindset entrepreneur. Again, not business owner, not consultant, entrepreneur, and share their stories with the world, their world people bore me, the world people, I love them. And so as a journalist, shared stories with the world about basically people changing the world. So there's been no difference between.
I think that qualifies you as an influencer now, not a journalist, but what we could leave that.
Call it whatever you want, whatever label that is. The label I've given myself is visionary wackadoo. So that's
there you go.
Actually trademarked that, but you know, fine, influencer, whatever you want to call it. That's fine. Connecting superheroes. That's another one. But you know, I just don't understand business owner stuff. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Define that.
So business owners care about revenue, bottom line, employee count, office space, and they're trying to change their world there. And then true entrepreneur visionary, they care about purpose, spending time with loved ones, really doing a massive purpose project. And they're trying to change the world. They've already changed their world. It's a totally different, it's just a totally different mindset.
Justin, I think as you're speaking, what triggers my mind into thought processes, a couple of generations ago, there wasn't this abundance mindset. We weren't so mm-hmm. connected. So we were worried about ourselves. We were about our survival.
Yes.
And then it's like retirement. There was no retirement two generations ago. Now we have this, Otto von Bismarck in the 1890s said, oh, retirement's a good thing. Let's get rid of the old people for the young people. And it's the same thing with creating impact. We're worried about our little tribe. I think back in like 1900, 75% of the people didn't leave their town or their village. So you're just worried about yourself. Mm-hmm. And now those who really excel in this economy are out there, the Zig Ziglars of the world, getting people enough of what they want, having that go-giver mentality.
The customer wants and needs too, right? Versus just the solopreneur, the small business person, making sure they're getting what they want sacrificing the customer's needs.
And that's not a natural tendency for us as humans. We want to protect ourselves first, but then that's why Jake and I love financial freedom. Because once you have that number and your nut is your monthly thing is taken care of, all of a sudden you can step outside of yourself and say, okay, what can I do to help others? How can I create value for others? I wish we'd started sooner, but sometimes we're just, I have six kids. I got to feed them. I'm worried about myself.
Right. You have to learn and grow, Gino. And as a business owner, yes, there's constant inflection points every 2 to 3 years where your mind elevates and you realize a new, you know, paradigm shift that happens. Mm-hmm. And you don't start off like that. Okay. And typically there's not, unless you do, you know, like I think you mentioned the Dan Sullivan thing that he's involved in. If you don't get these scaling up type coaches, you don't know what you don't know. And that's why coaching is imperative.
So when did you start the coaching, Justin? That was a question.
I never answered your question, which is kind of funny. But everything to me has always been an investment. And again, I simplify everything into patterns. Okay. So within a couple months actually of starting the first company, I joined, we'll just call it a networking group. I joined a $250 a year networking group. And then the other pattern that I've noticed is I keep making bigger investments into smaller rooms, but the people in those rooms are making bigger impacts. So bigger investment, smaller room, bigger impact, bigger. So that allows me to spend biggest investment in smallest room, which is my family, where I can make the most impact. So it's the same formula, bigger investment, small. Okay. So the first one of those groups is $250 a year. Nobody in that room understood what I was talking about, but that's okay. Then there was a $500 a year. Then there was $1,000. Then there was $2,000. There was $5,000. Then there was $10,000. Now the two groups I'm in are $25,000 a year each, but they never started like that. And two, it's always been an investment because bigger investment, smaller room, bigger impact. And what happened was, I think I was in a $500 a year room. And I was talking to someone. I always think this is funny. I was talking to them at lunch. It was a one-on-one lunch and in person. This was pre-COVID. And they go, well, I have no idea what you're talking about, but the guy who runs my company does. So he introduced me to the guy running his company. That person's name is Gary Klaben. So Gary graduated first in his Army Rangers graduating class. He runs a really successful financial planning company. And then he's most at peace when he's driving 200 miles an hour. So I can relate to that. And so then he's like, well, you're not $500 a year room, you're $10,000 a year. I'm like, okay. So that room was strategic coach. That's Dan Sullivan's. So that I started that in 2019. And now I'm in Strategic Coach 10X, which is just 25K a year. And then this hat is Abundance 360. That's Peter Diamandis's. That's also 25K
a year. All right. We're here supposed to be selling some books, by the way, everybody. So Epic Life, let's talk about the book. I mean, how did you come up with the idea? I mean, you must have always had it in your mind, but when did you say to yourself, I mean, my family's got to come on this journey. He's got to come on the ride with me. And I see a lot of people out there that aren't doing what I think they should be doing. And they're missing out on life. They're missing out on all those important things in their lives.
Well, again, that's a great question. I'm guessing, so there's a thing called IQ. And so 140 and above is genius level. That's 1% of the population. I'm guessing you said you're not smart, but I bet your IQ you're in that 140
90,
range.
100, right
no,
around
there's
there.
There's no way. And then your EQ is off the charts as well. So entrepreneurs are the most damaged people with the best coping skills. And usually those coping skills are something like high IQ or very high EQ. And then I'm 139. So I'm actually glad, because when you get really high above 140, it's like not really human in any capacity. So I've actually figured I'm a bridge between like true geniuses floating around in space, literally, and then I can translate it to human. The mass audience, but you know what happened was, is I talked to these geniuses there because they're true geniuses. And you know, I know when someone is going down the wrong way, when they always lead with, oh, you know, I just sold my company for so-and-so, or just expanded here, or just bought a new car. And when there's like three or more of those listings and then I'll always ask, so how's your family, or, you know, what else is going on? And then certainly there are exceptions, but many times it's, oh, I've never seen my family, or I never see my kids, or I'm going through a terrible divorce. So they're trying to replace meaningful measurements with material ones. And it doesn't work. It's just a Pyrrhic victory. And so when you talk to one to two people like that every single week, and I've done that for years now, I'm like, well, that's a bad idea. Let's write a book about how to build collaborative global companies while putting your loved ones first. So that's a message I mean.
It seems like so many guys go through the first bad experience and it takes a divorce or something or a bad experience with their kid until they realize they screwed up. And then they're scrambling and joining like programs and things to try to catch
up. Many times it's too late. Many times. So and the scrambling is the key word there.
Yeah.
So again, entrepreneurs are the very most damaged people with the best coping skills. So the difference, you know, again, most of my days talking to the world's top entrepreneurs, so not business owners, not consultants. And what I see, and I have not met one of those people, not one that has not overcome at least one of the following four things. Most are two or three. The really successful ones, most of the time they're all four. So this is what separates entrepreneurs from business owners, humans, consultants. This is what separates. The four things are bankruptcy or potential bankruptcy, two, depression, three, the highest level of anxiety that you can imagine, and four, likely and or possible traumatic experiences as a child or young adult. So humans, business owners, so those four things are excuses for those people. Entrepreneurs, that's entrepreneur life. Now, many times, the unfortunate dovetail to that is certainly not always.
Hold on, I missed you there. You're saying that entrepreneurs look at that stuff and say whatever, but business owners
acknowledge it? Those are excuses.
Excuses for what?
For not going global, for not building the second company, for not...
Because they had, problems in their childhood or something, and entrepreneurs don't acknowledge it. Is that what you're saying?
They just they just use it as motivation.
Gotcha.
It's motivation. It's fuel. Oh, I'm going to show everyone this. Okay. I can't give his name, but so his dad beat the crap out of him in his car when he was six, threw him out of the car and then left him at the side of the road. This guy owns multiple nine-figure companies now. Very damaged human being, by the way. No
if
family.
I went back, I'd find that guy's dad. I'd F that dad up. I'd find that dad.
He effed his dad up by creating nine-figure company. One of my PR partners, his grandfather was decapitated in Burma. Decapitated in Burma, not Myanmar, Burma. When he was a kid, he went to Hong Kong with his dad with $10 in their pocket. They created three eight-figure businesses, and his latest company is an at-home robot. His mom has dementia, so he created an at-home robot pill dispenser to keep people with dementia occupied. So that's entrepreneur life. I mean, that's what I'm three of the four. Knock on wood, the only one I haven't had to worry about is bankruptcy or potential bankruptcy. I don't think I'll have to go through that. I hope I don't. However, if it did happen, that probably would propel me to. But I don't want to sacrifice.
You don't want to test that out, right?
I don't. But I'm telling, like, so Dan Sullivan, he's the co-founder of Strategic Coach. He was bankrupt and divorced on the same day.
That's a bad day.
And now,
bad day, right?
You can argue, and I would argue this, Strategic Coach is the top entrepreneurial group in the world. I mean, so, but that's like, it's almost like it's required to go through. I was doing this assessment test. I can't remember what it's called, but one of them was like a life curve, and I'm really bad at like drawing or using hand movements, but it's like, here's your stability. Then you take this dip. So it's like friction, or you're going through this, but then it allows you to get up to here. Then there's a new normal. Then you take another dip, and then you get, so like you have to take the dip, those, you know, a year of suckage or going through some tough stuff to get to the next level. It's like it's like an essential ingredient.
So Justin, before we go to the personal growth, I want to know, what can us as entrepreneurs, how do we blend in family life with trying to grow a global company? Is it really fleshing out what your values are and putting them up in center and making decisions? We call it values-based decision-making and long-termism. What else do you look for? I mean, what else can an entrepreneur listening to this say, hey, how do I work in this framework? Because you're simplifying everything, activate, maximize, achieve.
I mean, you're a very high level simplifier patterns. I bet your IQ is, so IQ measures patterns. Your IQ is very high. there's, so you can downgrade your brain all you want, but you have a very high IQ. I mean, I can hear it, how you talk and think. But so literally every chapter in the book is a simplified pattern and answer for that. The one that answers your question most directly is the chapter winning the wrong game. And so I was talking to a very high level entrepreneur, Jesse Elder. He's a genius. I don't know what his IQ, but it's way over 140. There's no doubt about that. And so I was asking a very similar question to what you were just asking me, because I'm not an ideator and Jesse's definitely top five. I'm like, so why do these entrepreneurs, they care about, you know, employee count, revenue, all this stuff. And he's like, oh, and then they don't have anything meaningful. And it's like, oh, they're just winning the wrong game. They're just winning the wrong game. I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. I'll write about that. I'll write that down. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that folks can ask themselves. People like us can ask themselves, are you winning the right game? The one that actually matters to you. The second one I think that would definitely answer your question is the first chapter, which is my favorite chapter. This was advice my father gave me. My father was an exceptional human being. I'm happy to talk about that more. But so his advice was the cream rises to the top. The cream rises to the top. So my father was 61 when I was born. 61, he'd be 106 if he was alive. He was shot down multiple times in World War II, many times without a parachute, got back in the plane without a parachute. So that's my litmus test. Are you someone who's going to get back in the plane without a parachute or make an excuse? And when your litmus test is that high, it weeds out business owners. It weeds out, you know, 99.9% of the population, but the 0.1% that will get in the plane without the parachute, they're the ones that actually change the world. Mm-hmm. So are you setting your standards high enough to actually attract the top people on the planet?
And how you set your standards is by getting in those rooms for $25,000 a year. And that's what you're doing. You're surrounding yourself with people who are as greater than you and who's smarter.
Way better, way smarter, way more experienced. And that's a great, again, genius. You guys, I love how you think. They're not only more experienced in winning the right game, they're also more experienced in winning the wrong game. And you can learn what not to do as well. So there's 34 of those strength finders. I'm dead last in empathy, dead last. However, for people like you, I have endless empathy. When people like you talk about, oh, I have this horrible experience with a business partner, or I'm getting divorced, or never had a family, I get like it all. I almost stop because I feel so horrible about it. When someone who's not like that just makes an excuse, I don't understand it. I don't. But when someone like you is going through something horrible like that, it almost kills me.
But Justin, let me ask you though. Smart people learn from other people's mistakes. Smart people learn from other mistakes. Wise people learn from others. I may be just old enough where I have enough life experience. I've lived around and I've seen enough things. It doesn't make me more intelligent. It just makes me have more wisdom and makes mm-hmm. me be able to see things. So I don't think I love to really record that and show my wife and tell my wife that somebody thinks I'm a genius.
Gino's taking this shit to the bedroom tonight. See, honey, see this?
Is your wife a stabilizing human, by the way? Usually people like us marry like a school teacher. Or
she's
my wife's
a homeschool mom. She's a fucking rock star. She saved my soul. So yeah.
Yeah. So I say the patterns. Usually people like us marry stabilizing humans because look, my wife's a pediatrician. So empathy, warmth, love, rules, order, calendar, lists, and all that. I'm like, and she's like, she taught me how to say thank you. And then our kids are, our sons are 8 and 10. So they have her, whatever that stuff is. And then they have my full go for it. Like, you know, total entrepreneur maniac. So it's a really interesting. And then you have six. So that'd be interesting if they're more like
fucking great. Wish I had more. I'm trying to like get over the dark side, but I think we're shut down, Jake. So
Gino, you never know, man. Just keep trying.
I know, bro. It's just like, you know, come on. You're so good at it, Julie. You're a great mom. And she's like,
I didn't know where you're going with that, Gino. I was like, well, we're getting a little spicy right now. Oh, shit.
Feel free to play. But so like, and does your wife take more chances in life now? Because like, my wife comes from two sheltered parents. Great, great people, but they never, not a lot of chances. And now she takes more chances than she ever would have.
Justin, she was afraid fearful, God fearful of public speaking. We're doing a podcast right. together for the last 3 years. She's speaking on stage with me. She'd become a life coach.
100%.
She's a lot smarter than me, actually. She's very, very, very intelligent, like super intelligent. She can figure anything out. She barely went to college, but I mean, it's just amazing, mind-boggling the shit that she can do. It's just like, wow. And then I got to keep up with her. So I have to figure out how to actually, you know, hang with her because she's really super intelligent and can figure things out. And, you know, when you have six kids and, you know, things break and something happens and you got to be a doctor or you got to, you know, fix something. She's really amazing. It's amazing.
She just says up some fish oil on it. I know what she's up to. All right.
That's why I married a pediatrician. I mean, seriously. Like, so my wife and I, our first date was the day before she started medical school. That was our first date. And it's certainly not entrepreneur life, but if there's anything comparable to that, it's going through medical school rotations, residency. And as different as, like, my wife and I are very opposite in almost everything. However, our core values are exactly the same, which is very important.
Love that.
All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. All right, we are back. You brought up the word pattern no less than five times. So I have to ask you, what is your best habit for success? Because we too like to look for patterns within the guests that we interview.
Okay. So my whole life is good habits, good patterns, which become good habits. So good patterns become good habits. So that's like literally my whole life. So the first thing I do every single day, every day, is a grateful journal to my wife. So what am I grateful for her the previous 24 hours? Without my wife, bad situation, very bad, not good.
Why is the wife so important when journaling? Because we've gotten into both Gino and I have recently, and I know in my own life experience, there's something about being grateful for your wife and a loving relationship there that really, and maybe it has to do with me being a man. I don't know what it is, but as a male, having gratitude towards my wife literally lights a fire under my ass in the morning. So I don't know if you can unpack that. This is a nuance to me.
Yeah, because all I want is the answer. And then I talk to people and then I get the answer because they're all ideators. I'm like, that's a good answer. Okay. So I put, for people who can't see it, I put my print score, print, P-R-I-N-T in there. So I'm an 8.3. It's your unconscious motivators, unconscious. So what is, people see the tip of the, this answers your question, by the way. So people see the tip, they don't see under the water.
Just the tip.
Yeah, they just see the tip, they don't see under the water. So the underlying factors. So most visionaries are 8.3 or 3.8s like me. So 8 is to be strong and self-reliant, 3 is to succeed and achieve, okay? Okay, strong and self-reliant, succeed and achieve. Get back into a plane without a parachute. That's an entrepreneur. My wife and most entrepreneurs like us, certainly not all of them, most of them marry someone like my wife, who is a 2.6. 2 is to be needed and appreciated, and 6 is to feel safe and secure. Gino, that is your wife. I don't know her in any capacity, but that's her.
It sounds like the perfect fit, you know?
It's the perfect fit. It's.
I'm not trying to be a sexist either, but I think that shit works for a lot of men. Right?
Well, that's why people like us, and it doesn't matter what gender you are, but I talk to a lot of 8'3 women that are married to 2'6 men. That's just, or women that are married to women. It doesn't matter. And so the most important thing for my wife is for someone to say thank you to her. I don't care if I didn't even know how to say thank you until I met my wife. So that is how
she
I
trained you well.
Well, and that's what it is. She trained me. She trained me like you have to say thank you to people or you have to say thank you to me. And so that's how I do it for her every single day. And I to answer your question, I strongly feel many people like us, they're not feelers or overthinkers. They're execute, execute. Like imagine being an empathetic owner of a company with 1,000 employees. That would be horrible. I mean, think being in everyone else's shoes. I mean, how would you get anything done? I mean, you could, I guess, but I couldn't. But usually you're married or with someone who is a feeler or a thinker to not only help you slow down, but actually like there's another side of life here that actually matters. So that's why that's the first thing I do, because without my wife, I mean, there's no life without my wife. And I know that, and I'm grateful for that every day. So that's the first habit pattern. The second one is for the last, at least 15 years, at least, I've run outside no matter the weather conditions. So we live in Chicago. It gets cold, hot, rainy, windy. It's horrible weather 99% of the time. So I run 3 to 5 miles, 6 days a week, every day except Sunday. And then I listen to shows like this while I'm running. So good lungs, good heart, good legs, and then good mind at the same time.
Good cardio. They're saying it's like the 5X drug here. You know, you want to improve your health. That's the mortality marker right there. You get good cardio, you're better in your odds. So,
well, thanks for telling me that. And again, I didn't know that even though I was married to a doctor, but again, that's like, but that makes sense.
It's not the pill. It's the Nikes that you're putting on. And I want to say thank you because reference to running. So the why behind your habit answer, I want to say thank you because most people will discuss things that they're doing, but not elaborate why. And I appreciate the clarity there. So thank you for that. The last few years, you've been scaling businesses. And I think that's, you know, one of the places where early entrepreneurs get tripped up. And it's kind of the difference between if they're going to be successful, be a solopreneur, all that stuff or not. So I'd love to hear an experience, an inflection point, a tip, anything that you picked up in the early years of scale that is attributable to, you know, many businesses that you can share with the folks, because we got, literally, I had a guy that sold his company to Warren Buffett that financed our fifth deal. That basically said, you need to get out of the way and start scaling your company or you're not going to succeed. Right. And so that was a gut punch early on for us. So I'd love to hear sort of, and you joined Scaling Up. So I know I'm going long-winded with the question, but you know, please shine some light on this for us.
Yeah. You're a high fact finder, which I appreciate that. The, so there are two. One, so in the first book, one of the chapters is when you start a company, it takes 2 full years to really figure it out. I think a lot of people who have started companies, they're very appreciative of that. So, cause it's not an overnight thing. So almost 2 years into the first company, I'd made more money than I ever thought possible, in a year. Cause journalism, that's not why you do it. And then, so I'd never been more miserable in my life. So I'm like, oh, more money makes you most miserable. So I'm like, oh, I'm glad I went through that, because I realized very quickly that more money not only doesn't make me happier, it makes me worse. So because I learned that, the only two 10Xs I actually 10X growth I really care about are experience in life with my family, and then creating or growing network on a global level. I found all this other stuff all this other stuff kind of.
So is it just purpose then? Is it just purpose that's gained through being an entrepreneur?
So that's the first part of it. The first part of it is really focusing on my family and purpose. The rest of this is kind of take care of itself. The scaling aspect of it, which I'm really glad you asked about, for second company, I would describe myself as an integrating visionary, which is very rare. Most visionaries, they can't integrate anything.
It's the Steve Jobs of the world.
Yes, yes. And like that, usually most visionaries, if they don't hire a million people, nothing would get done. They wouldn't. So I'm the very rare.
Ray Dalio actually describes that in his book. And it pisses me off because I can't remember the term. He actually labeled that and gave it a term, someone that can actually get in the weeds, manage, but also be a visionary as well.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. I can do it.
I wish I could remember the term, but anyways, carry on. Sorry.
Well, if it's helpful, I'm an integrating visionary.
Yeah.
The partner for my second company, again, we created a SaaS LinkedIn without the BS, invite only high price point connectivity platform, because I like LinkedIn, but a lot of it's BS on there. I like LinkedIn. So he is a visionary integrator, which is also very, 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 so he's full backstage, but he's an even bigger visionary than I am. Even though he's backstage, so I could never build a SaaS platform. I don't understand any backstage in terms in the tech world. I can barely hold a pencil, right? Like, I'm not kidding. I can barely.
You're time in good company.
I don't know how to set a Zoom meeting. I just show up.
So I'm glad to hear. Thank you for being vulnerable about that. There are things that a monkey can do. I can't, like my
I don't know how all this shit happens. I'm just here. Okay, folks. How it happens.
You're just here. And like, you know, what I've learned is like, I'm really good at like two things, maybe two. And then I just stay in that. And then I either don't do it if I leave that area, or find someone to do it for me, because otherwise then that's been the key to scaling up. And I just can't, my wife always looks at me if I try to touch the thermostat. My dad's last living brother, who was born in 1918, he passed away. But, so on our wedding day, which was May 4th, 2008, he wasn't able to fly to the wedding, but I talked to him. I'm like, hey, you've been married for 70 years. Do you have any good advice? Cause I want to use it in the speech. And he said two things. He goes, one, always put your wife's needs before yours. I'm like, oh, that's good. And then he goes, Oh, and never touch the thermostat. So I look at anything outside what I'm really good at or like to do as never touching the thermostat. Mm-hmm. Never. I don't do it. I don't touch the thermostat.
I get reprimanded and she corrects that shit quick. So even when I try, it doesn't make a difference. So.
Oh yeah. Right. So that's good. That's a good human reminder.
It doesn't matter if I touch it, cause I know she's going to fix it again quickly. And then if I go back for it again, I'm getting smacked. So I just,
right.
You know, it doesn't matter if I touch it or not. And yeah, so I'm kind of afraid of that.
Sounds like a happy marriage to me.
any books you've read recently that you want to recommend that have benefited your life?
So number one is Man's Search for Meaning. I mean, I would say I'm a very black and white person. And for those who haven't read that, Viktor Frankl, he survived the Holocaust, lost his whole family, lost his life's work, wrote about that experience and then what is the actual meaning for life. I mean, that's the ultimate. And honestly, like my dad's diary. So he, again, World War II hero, he wrote a diary from the Battle of the Hürtgen Forest, which was a very deadly battle towards the end of World War II. I found it after he died. I was 13 when he died, and I found it after he died. And if there's ever like a little, I mean, this is one of the most horrific things ever written. There's some excerpts in my second book from it. It's just really horrific stuff. So if excuses ever kind of pop in, one, I'll go look at Man's Search for Meaning, and two, I'll look at my dad's diary. So those are the two books.
Jay, can I just ask Justin one thing about Man's Search for Meaning? When I didn't read the book, but I read a lot about the book. The reason why he survived the Holocaust is because he had a hope and optimism to say that he wanted to write what was in his mind. Right. And that was the difference between him surviving and others. They can't take away that freedom. And he felt more free in his mind than the Holocaust perpetrators and the people who were prison guards. And that's how he had it. And that was his search. That was his meaning. That was his big why. So when you hear Simon Sinek and everyone talking about it, they read the Napoleon Hills of the world and they read the Viktor Frankls of the world, and they've digested that and said, how do we apply that to today? And reading that book, I mean, think about all the atrocities that he went through. He's able to go into his mind and say, I need to survive this because I possibly have family out there and I want to get this out. And that is, it's amazing. Nietzsche talks about that. If you have a big enough why, you'll figure out how. So it's really good to go back and read.
That's the thing too, because if you look back in the last 100 years, all the crazy stuff that has happened to other humans, and you know, when I'm having conversations with our team and we're having a rough time at it, or it's a hard day, guys, we're not storming a beach here with bullets being shot at us. We're not even close to that. So let's take a step back and realize what this is.
We've got running water. We've got toilets, people. I mean, I'm just saying, two generations.
It's just not even close. It's just, it's perspective.
Mom was in Italy hoping that the potatoes were growing and hoping that it didn't freeze over. And, you know, so I agree with you.
We're playing a different game.
Well, you would like my dad's. So I'll just tell you this one excerpt. And so, like, again, my dad was born in 1916. So really, like, I probably should have been born like 1940. So I'm like an old wisdom soul, 45-year-old body with the childlike mindset, maybe of a 5-year-old, like probably four. My wife has three sons, our sons and me, our two sons and me, like a child. But so, like, Christmas Day 1944, my dad's diary. This is my Christmas Day 1944 dad's diary entry. He was on the ground. He was watching three American planes fight a Nazi plane in the air, and then the Nazi plane shot down the first two American planes. The third American plane got the Nazi plane down. The Nazi pilot jumps out of the plane. His parachute doesn't open. He just, bam, just slam, explodes on the ground. This is the Christmas Day. So my dad and his friends, soldier buddies, go over to the body, and they one of them could read German. They got the paperwork. The pilot was, the guy who died, he was 19 on his first ever mission, 19. So, like, that's my litmus test. Like, that's why I just can't understand excuses. And to have a father like that is it's a great gift. It continues to be a great. And then our sons are, they're just like that. I mean, they just full maniac, visionary in a good way. Then with my wife's love and that stuff.
That's awesome. Got it. What's the best way for folks to connect, get a hold of you, work with your companies, all the goods?
Thanks. They can go to BrepicLLC.com, BrepicLLC.com. And there's a fun mindset scorecard on there. And people actually, it takes 5 minutes. People actively qualify or disqualify themselves with their own mindset, which is really interesting to me.
There's the test. Gino, take us home.
Jake, give me a minute or two to wrap this thing up, because my mind is going all over the place. We've got different times and different dates with Justin going to journalism school. And he's like, I'm going here. I'm trying to write this stuff. And no one wants to learn about these amazing stories. They want to learn about death and destruction, not about growth. And in 2017, he decides to quit because he has 5 clients. And he says, I'm making as much money as I was in journalism. And he starts going to these rooms with $500 a year and starts scaling up. And the three things that he talks about with an entrepreneur is the visionary, the abundance, and the investment. I'm trying to get that together because that's really important, everybody. The visionary, having the abundance mindset and looking at it as an investment. And that $500 was an investment. How many of you out there think $500 is an expense? You're investing in yourself. That's really important. 2020, his first book comes out, 2020, the second book comes out, and his three tenets, I think, that he lives by is activate, maximize, and achieve. And I think he's still a journalism. I think he still loves the journalism part, Jake, but he's like, you know what? I think this business thing is much better, and I'd rather help people out.
Hey, he's a honeybee, Gino. All right.
Yes. By figuring out how to help others impact the world, grow global companies, but also put family and those things that are important in life ahead of the other stuff.
Justin, really appreciate your time today, gang. As always, we believe in buying deals for the long-term, thinking decades. I'm Jake. He's a G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Justin.